you like this episode, please subscribe, share with others, rate and review so we can continue to bring you great programming.
This is The Thing About Cars, a podcast for car enthusiasts and the people who love them.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Thing About Cars. I'm one of your hosts, Mickey Desai. Around the table, we have our full crew. That would be Dawn. Hello, Dawn.
Hey there, everyone.
And Misty.
Hiya.
Misty's there. I see Ben.
Hey.
And Dave.
Howdy, howdy.
Dave looking resplendent in those Swarovski crystal-encrusted glasses.
I'm seeking an Elton John vibe today based on what we have in store.
Before we get to our guest, then Misty's glamming it up today. What's the inspiration for your ensemble today, Misty?
To be honest, it was the fan war that Dave and I had last time. And I was like, you know, let's just see how far we can take this with accessories.
Yeah!
I see you, you're meh, and I raise you Venetian lace.
That is brilliant.
Very posh.
And our special guest for today is our friend, good friend and trivia czar, Tim. Tim, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Excellent. I'm glad you could be with us today. Before we get on with the show, would you do us the honor of reading a trivia question for today?
Okay, sure. So the Ford EcoSport is the first vehicle imported into the U.S. from which country? A, Albania, B, China, C, India, or D, Brazil.
We need to read those again?
Sure. A, Albania, B, China, D, sorry. C,
no,
I'm getting alphabetically dyslexic here. A, Albania, B, China, C, India, or D, Brazil.
And it could be any of those, really. And I confess, I do know the answer because Tim did send me this one in advance and I was going to read it today. But since Tim joined us, I figure let's let the trivia czar himself introduce the question. So think about that. We'll answer that question at the end of the show. Let's go to our first segment, which is, you know, Tim has been our guest on the show before. So he's no stranger to the thing about cars, obviously. Tim, what's on your mind today?
I recently came across Billboard magazine's top 100 car songs of all time. Online. Being a lifelong Rush fan, I looked to see where their epic song, Red Barchetta, came in on the list, and it was at a lowly number 88. And for me, this song is, you know, one of the perfect songs about that describes a car, describes a mood, and describes a driving experience. And I was going, so why in the world is that, you know, ranked so low? And I was thinking, well, it's Billboard magazine, you know, they're all about what's in the top 40. And a lot of these songs never made it into the top 40. And so the song Red Barchetta is one of those. It was a rock hit, but not a top 40 hit. So I went through the whole list and I wanted to bounce a few of these songs off of y'all because, you know, a lot of songs are either about a car or they're about a driving experience or they're about something else, even though they're kind of in the context of a car. So I'm going to go through. We're going to jump in. You know, I've already talked about, you know, the song Red Barchetta, so I'll go ahead and take that. It's a song set in a kind of a dystopian future where cars have basically been legislated into big safety tanks. And so you no longer can have a nice spirited drive through a scenic highway or down a country road because the cars have become too big to in the quest to forever protect the occupant. The song was based actually on a 1973 short story found in Road and Track magazine called A Quiet Sunday Drive. But in the song, our protagonist leaves the city, goes out on a train to his uncle's farm where he's preserved one of the very first Ferraris. I can't remember what the actual name of the car is because it's, you know, it's one of those alphanumeric names, but it was known as the Barchetta, which means little boat. And so he takes it for a drive and is eventually chased by the police. But because his car is small and nimble, he's able to outrun the police in their big safety tanks and makes it back to his uncle's place. But I want to just jump in and I'm going to just kind of throw out a person's name and, the name of a car, of a, one of these songs. And, you know, tell me what you know about, if you know the song. The first one's kind of a wild card, so I'll throw it up for whoever might know this song. But yeah, is it about a car, about a driving experience, or is it about something else? So first one, whoever wants to kind of buzz in, the song Rearview Mirror by Pearl Jam. Anybody familiar with that song?
I think I know the one you're talking about. It's actually a cover, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's actually a cover.
What number is it?
But I know the song. It's about the driving experience.
Yeah, that's a bit. It's also a lot about getting out of a relationship. You know, it's like, girl, I'm looking at you in my rearview mirror.
Tim, those are synonymous with me.
Driving experience as metaphor, then.
Driving experience as metaphor, yes.
Right. And we'll give that one to Dave. All right. So, Misty, you know the song Last Chance Texaco by Ricky Lee Jones, late 70s?
No. I was very wee then.
All right. Anybody else know the song?
I do not.
No.
Oh.
Okay. I know the title.
So it's not actually about a Texaco gas station, but it's about available relationships. You know, basically, if you're you see that sign when you're about to go down a desert road and it says last gas for the next 70 miles, they're not saying they're the best gas station, but they're saying the only gas station.
Yeah. We don't actually have that here. What you do have, though, when leaving Belgium is the last patat stand. The last French fry place when you're leaving Belgium to go into France.
That would be pretty damn important.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because I know that I have to get my French fries with a nice side of mayonnaise.
More importantly, being the last option, not the best option for relationship, hits a little close to home, Tim.
Yeah. I was going to say, as far as metaphors go, it's kind of a depressing one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like it is. I'm actually going to start drinking in the show.
It's okay. The next song gets more depressing. So, Don, going to throw this one to you. Dead Man's Curve by Jan and Dean.
Oh, yeah. I know that song.
Okay.
He's dead at the end of it. I mean, he's racing. It's a drag racing song. And it's a really old song. And fun, but it's not fun because it ends with them dead. So, I know that song.
Yeah. So that kind of comes from the era of that was known as death rock, where there are, a lot of songs about teens going out and dying. I don't know what that says about our country in the 60s.
Well, and also that period where surf kind of morphed into hot rod music.
Right. And, Beach Boys and all those fun cars, and I think it talks about Route 1 or something, the coastal highway, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, because I know that there was a show on Motor Trend, and I can't remember the name of it, where they actually went back and went to find where that actual curve is, and it's been kind of well documented, and there have been a few changes made to that road since, but not much because of the available land that they could change because it belongs to homeowners. And prophetically, one of the members of the band nearly died in a car accident very close to that turn. And, basically he was never able to perform again because he had, some pretty severe brain injury.
Wow.
So far you've brought us bad relationships, desperation, and death. Fun segment, then.
Right. Exactly.
Wow.
Which is not what cars are about. It's about fun and freedom and driving.
Exactly. And that's why I started with my favorite Rush song about cars, because I started on a high note, and this whole Billboard list just goes downhill from there.
It does. I'm looking at this list and I'm thinking, where are these songs? Like, my songs are not on here. All the ones that I go to, these are from some depressing things. And
I found one of mine on here, but let's let Tim finish his list and we'll go back.
It's like when halfway through the list you've worked up to something by the Smiths. This does not bode well.
Oh,
right. And I've skipped over that one for now, just
because that Morrissey is. I'm sorry, Tim, but that Morrissey is just such a bright ray of sunshine, right? So
always, yes. I'm amazed he could even be, get up out of bed to drive a car.
Right. He is kind of the Dr. Kevorkian of fun music,
right? Oh.
All right. Okay. What was the next one, Tim?
Rocking Down the Highway by the Doobie Brothers.
Oh.
Ben, what's that about?
Gee, I haven't the foggiest. It's such a rocking song, I never really paid attention to the lyrics.
Right. Yeah. And it's Yeah, this is the actual first feel-good song on the list we've come to. You know, it's about get out and go. It's escapism, you know, driving down the road and leaving your cares behind.
Awesome.
Yay. Yeah.
Oh, I like the write-up, though. It says, go faster, outrun the cops, and just keep moving.
Right. That's what I'm talking about.
Right. Yeah.
Outrunning the cops, not endorsed by the thing about cars. But
I was waiting for Dave to say that.
Tim beat me to it.
Darn.
Great
Good job. Right? Good job, Tim.
Next one over to Mickey. Let's go with Driving My Life Away by Eddie Rabbit.
That was one of the ones that I had looked at. I love that song. It's been a long time since I've actually heard it, but I still can't tell you what it's about. I'm assuming it has something to do with trucking.
For me, this is like one of the first few country songs that I ever knew of because of the old ads in the late 70s for KTEL Records.
Yes.
And that was one of the ones that was featured with the lyric of windshield wipers slapping out the tempo.
Tempo, yep.
Beat with the song on the radio. Yep. And so, yeah, it's
looking
about
for a better day.
Sunshine.
Yeah, it's a fun song.
Yeah.
That is a fun song. Yeah,
it's number 55 on their list. Who here knows Beyonce songs?
Misty.
Why are you pointing at me? I know some Beyonce songs.
Well, you're the official international amongst us. So.
I know an embarrassing amount.
Okay. All right. Okay. So this one over to Dave. So it's the Beyonce song Partition.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's racy.
Racy does not really begin to describe it because essentially it's about having sex with Jay-Z, isn't it?
Well, let's keep it a little bit more broader and we'll say what happens in the back of the limo stays in the back of the limo. Yeah.
Unless you're writing a song about the partition in the limo. Yeah.
Right. Yes. You have to.
Sounds very mechanical.
So you need to block off the driver from what's going on in the back. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. Okay. Misty, going to throw it back to you. The song GTO by Ronnie and the Daytonas.
I'm sure I've heard it, but it's not ringing a bell.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm 70s, mostly 70s and forward, and you can always ask me questions about obscure Dutch bands. It may not be so true.
Well, that comes up later in the list, so don't worry. I'll save that one for you. And that was one of those car songs from the 60s. Featuring the great line, turn it on, wind it up, blow it out, GTO. So basically an homage to the Pontiac GTO. One totally about the car. Okay, so Dawn, going to throw this one to you. Freeway of Love by Aretha Franklin.
Oh, of course. Great song. Yeah. I mean, she's and just one of the standards that you would have on any good car playlist. I mean, Aretha Franklin, wonderful song.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you know enough about the lyrics? Now, is this really about the freeway? Is it about love, or is it something else?
And, you know, it's a metaphor. It's about love, and it's right. Using the highway as a metaphor. So it's all about the
right.
You know, getting off at different exits because you have to exit a relationship, or you know, going fast. I mean, it's the freeway of love. So yeah, it's all about relationship.
I think getting off at the exit is a very good way to put it, because she talks about getting into her pink Cadillac, and well, basically she is the Cadillac. So.
Of course,
mm-hmm. City traffic's moving way too slow. Drop the pedal and go.
Yeah,
she wants to get it on.
Right.
I loved in that video is the pink Cadillac's license plate is respect.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, okay. And you know, and she, right. I like the fact of her age, you know, she's 43 when the song was released. That's kind of cool. It's just, you know, she's had a great career. Wonderful voice.
Yeah. Many decade long career. So Ben, going to throw the next one to you. Fun by the Beach Boys.
Till her daddy took the T-Bird away. I think that's about more than the car.
It is, you know, she goes to cruise to the hamburger stand. She's forgotten all about the library, like she told her old man.
Right.
It's kind of because she has her dad lets her drive the T-Bird, you know, struggling to get she's supposed to be a teen. So let's say schoolwork to life balance in a wonderful metaphor about driving around in a car where she makes the Indy 500 look like a Roman chariot race.
Oh, yeah.
So kudos to our female protagonist who also is skilled behind the wheel.
I thought that song was T-Bird. So that's interesting. I had no idea that that's what the title of the song was.
Right. Back then, a lot of songs were written because the band was trying to sell it to the auto manufacturer as a song to use as an advertisement for their car. It might have been that Ford didn't want to pony up the buck. You know, I think definitely GTO was written. Okay, Mickey, going to throw the final one over to you. And this is the song Before He Cheats by Carrie Underwood.
I have never heard of this at all.
Really? Because when we think of country music, we think of you, Mickey.
I have no response to that except to laugh. It's just closet metalhead that I am. Yeah. Yeah, country and Mickey don't go in the same, not that often anyway. But so
it's
what's the song
really
about?
It's really a good song, though. It's a fun song, and so, I just never would have thought it as a driving song.
Well, let me guess, Tim. So country song, Before He Cheats. So the song is either full of sadness about the relationship, or she's a scorned woman and she's going to key his car, or she is Carrie Underwood, right? So maybe she's just going to get in the car and drive the heck away and never come back.
Well, being a country song, it's going to be a pickup truck.
Of course.
And she's going to take a baseball bat and literally like have at it.
Oh, so I wasn't wrong. I was not wrong. No.
Because he's cheating on her and it's with a bleach blonde tramp.
Oh, man.
And, yeah, so she's exacting revenge upon his vehicle. And so now, of course, the title of the song is Before He Cheats. And I think maybe she's saying that you need to set the record with your potential lover that if you go astray, bad things are going to happen, not necessarily to you, but to your car.
Well,
whatever's more important.
Tim, we're definitely going to have to dig into this list a little bit deeper. I do notice that there's one song that's missing. And I don't know if anyone here is going to remember it, but in 1987, an artist named Pebbles wrote a song called Mercedes Boy.
Mercedes Bit.
I remember that. Yes.
And it is.
Do you want to ride in my Mercedes Boy?
And it
absolutely
is conspicuously absent from this list. So, yeah. So,
well, I don't know if I'd put it on a list.
One of my favorites.
It is a car song, but I wouldn't call it a greatest.
No, I wouldn't either. It just sticks out in my mind as one of those songs that was an earworm that never went away.
I do want to give a shout out to Billboard for putting this list together, but also a warning for our listeners, do not assemble this as a playlist for a road trip.
No.
Yeah.
No, definitely.
By the time you're at Jackson Browns running on empty, you're going to go over a cliff.
It's true.
You are 100% Thelma and Louise. No, there is no doubt about it.
I mean, this is definitely not a playlist I would have ever thought for Cars. Absolutely not.
Like I said, we're going to have to do a little bit slightly deeper dig. Tim, when that happens, we'll let you know so you can come back for that.
Sure.
And thank you for bringing this to our attention. I think there's a lot of fun stuff in there, but now I'm going to go play Mercedes Boy and fall asleep to that at some point. But, Tim, my two questions, since you've been our guest before and we've done the standard questions before, I have two questions for you just to wrap up this bit, which is simply, what's your favorite ice cream?
Rocky Road.
Figures.
That's brilliant.
That predates my interest in cars.
Yeah. Oh, that's one of my faves too.
Right. And the last question gets a little, I want to use the word esoteric. I'm not sure that's quite right, but what three people living or dead would you invite to dinner?
Wow. Albert Einstein, Ayrton Senna. And you know, the third one is always the hardest one because it seems like you have to end on a high note. I would say Robin Williams.
Yeah.
All dead guys.
Yeah, thanks, well, Ben.
So living was an option, so
that's true.
Good choices, though.
Ben, it costs less. It costs less to feed dead guys.
This is true.
Right.
All right.
And you know, if you have to make it a dream list, then you know you still have a chance with all the people who are already alive. You know,
right.
You never know when you're going to bump into someone.
True. Let's transition now. Thank you, Tim, and let's turn the table to Ben, who's got that new car smell. Take it away, Ben.
Yeah. Well, and. To flash back to the prior segment for just a second, I just remembered that the in a story that Tim mentioned in Road and Track, the car in the story was an MG, but before Neil Peart turned it into a Ferrari. So anyway, moving on. New car smell today. This is all about American muscle cars, such as they are in our current market. You know, done nothing like the 60s, I know, but hey, it is what it is. This is really kind of a Yeah, kind of a confluence of two different stories. Yeah, like most of us, I scroll around on my phone quite a lot, and I see a lot of headlines go by. And I saw a couple of them that sort of piqued my interest and led me to do a little bit of digging. And the research wound up getting into both of them, and it's about sales numbers. And the first of these headlines I saw was that the Mustang Mach-E outsold the gas Mustang for the first time ever. And the other headline was that the Camaro is doomed.
Again.
Yeah, again. I start looking. Well, I clicked on the one about the Mustang. And as it turns out, it was, a little bit of clickbait, a little bit of headline engineering there. But there's a kernel of truth to it. And that kernel is that the Mach-E outsold the regular Mustang for the month of June, but only the month of June. And, and the reasons are not necessarily pure popularity.
No.
Right. I mean, some of the supply chain issues and the fact that it's a new model, in fact, those kind of tie together. When you've got a limited supply of certain items, such as microchips, you might want to focus them toward the model you just introduced.
Right.
To get those out the door. The Camaro, of course, I think almost everybody knows, has been in a pretty weak sales position of late, which is surprising considering that it only gets better and better with every iteration. They keep adding more performance and things like that, but fewer and fewer people want them. Logic doesn't always rule the day with car sales. So I did a little digging into this, and I've already forgotten the site I went to get these numbers. It's carsales.com or something like that, but they've got an easy search feature where you can look up numbers. And I'm going to try not to make this sound like a math lesson, but basically, the four muscle cars, if we want to think of them that way, on the market right now are the Dodge Charger, the Dodge Challenger, the Ford Mustang, and the Chevy Camaro. The fact that there are two Dodges in the mix is kind of interesting, I think, too. I looked at numbers for total for 2021 as we have it so far for two quarters, Q2 of 2021, all of 2020, and all of 2019. And of course, we all know the 20 numbers are going to be a little weird. But that said, in basically every one of those categories, the Charger is the clear leader and the Camaro is in a fairly well-spaced last place. It's way behind. For the first two quarters of this year, the Charger has sold 42,103, the Challenger 30,148, the Mustang 31,950, and the Camaro 9,881.
Do you think some of that is due to price point?
I'm not really sure. There's a bit of variability with all of them when you get into the different, engine choices and option packages and things like that. Because you can get and with the Dodges, you have some pretty wide variability because you've got, two V6 trim levels and a whole lot of different V8 trim levels. Everything from the fairly basic RT, all the way up to Hellcat Demons and things, which are, kind of drag strip oriented cars that aren't going to appeal to a lot of people. So those really far out high end ones aren't going to sell big numbers. With the Mustang, you've got a Turbo 4 and a V8. I don't know how many different trim packages there are. And I'm really not familiar with what the Camaro offers, but I think it's kind of the same thing. I think you've got a choice of a Turbo 4 or a V8 in various different iterations. But it looks like in every one of these columns, basically the Charger's first, the Mustang is second, and the Camaro is last. A little bit of interchangeability between the Challenger and the Mustang here and there. And one of the things I read about this seems to indicate that the reason that the Charger is number one, even over the Challenger, for those who go for Mopar, is practicality. It has four doors. And what this says about the state of auto enthusiasm today makes me a little sad.
Yeah, exactly. I was wondering if you were going to take it that direction.
It's not even faster than the Challenger, I don't believe, because it's pretty much all the same powertrain choices, and it weighs 700 pounds more than the Challenger does. Hmm. They're built on different platforms, which surprised me. I thought they were probably built on the same one, but they're not. Similar platforms.
So you're saying get the Challenger?
For the two-door ones, well, we've got one at home, so we're a little biased.
Right.
I've driven a bunch of Mustangs as rental cars. Those are pretty nice too, but I think ultimately the Challenger is a little easier to live with than the Mustang. I have zero experience with the Camaro, so I can't really say anything about that. But they're all fun. They're all pretty decent cars. So it's just a matter of personal preference, I guess. But it's interesting stuff. And if anybody's curious, the Mach-E numbers for it in 2021, it has sold 12,975, but 6,361 of those were in Q2. And in 2020, it sold 3. I didn't even know there was one available in 2020. But
a friend of mine has ordered one for his family, and they haven't taken delivery of it yet. Apparently, the chip shortage is holding them up. So
yeah, now sales versus deliveries is another matter too, because right. I don't think I've seen a single Mach-E in the flesh out there yet.
I've seen one,
and I think I've seen maybe 5 Broncos so far, despite all the hullabaloo and hype about those. Of course, I understand they've had some delivery delays.
Yep. But let me ask this. Can we call the Mach-E a muscle car?
I don't know, but the fact that it does get compared to the regular Mustang in some of these numbers, and then that one headline I saw kind of brings it into the story. Another thing, too, that I don't know is whether or not the Charger sales includes police car sales, because it still remains one of the most popular law enforcement vehicles right now. I think basically in the law enforcement market, the two leaders are the Dodge Charger and the police version of the Ford Explorer.
Right.
And I don't know which one outsells the other one, but if cops are going to use a sedan, they hardly use anything other than a Charger these days. There's a few Chevys you'll see out and about, maybe some old leftover Fords, but
Yeah, and a lot of the police departments are now going with like Ford Explorers, because
right.
a lot of times right. the cars that they're chasing down and then trying to have to deal with, try to do a pit maneuver, let's say, are larger in the SUV size and can't win with a small car.
I think
that type of situation.
I jokingly think that the Charger was so popular with cops because its front end, had kind of that intimidating scowl sort of appearance to it. Although if you want to look up a really angry looking police car, look up a 1959 Dodge. That is the angriest looking car ever made.
All right, I'm going to go look that up. But before then, I want to say I think the Explorer is actually faster than the Charger.
That's a tough question. I don't know, but that'll be interesting to find out. Of course, in either case, you're looking at police package right. vehicles.
We'll answer that some other time. But
yeah,
excellent stuff, Ben. Thank you.
Yeah.
I do have actually a car question. We were going to skip the car question, worst car story section here, but we have a couple questions from Robert Drake that I think that we can answer pretty quickly. And he asks very simply, how have we come to a place as drivers where more than one person will pull around you as you're pulling over to get an ambulance to pass?
Oh, happened to me the other day.
Yeah, people will just keep driving even though there's an ambulance behind them, even as you're pulling over to let the ambulance by. So.
Or actually it was the opposite way. There was a tree down. And so we were turning right, but the tree was down on the left.
Yep.
And all the cars were stopped going up to where the tree, and there was tons of emergency vehicles, and a police car was coming toward us in the right lane. So coming straight on, and we had to get over because he was coming straight at us because the lane was blocked going the other way. And a car behind us scoots around us and realizes he has to get over. It was so obvious. It was crazy.
Yeah. So I don't have an answer for this, actually. Not one that doesn't turn into a rant anyway. It's something to do with people simply not being aware, not caring about the other folks around them. I don't, maybe we've forgotten what those courtesies are all about, but
I was going to say, yes, it's a lot of, and we've turned to an all about me society instead of it sprinkling in our proper dose of civic duty.
Misty, you think it's a lack of attention?
Yeah, I think, people are just so consumed with themselves. They don't look outside. It's like they're not looking past their front bumper.
Robert's second question, once I think we can also address pretty simply, is why do people drive with no lights on after dark on the expressway?
Because they're dumbasses.
Nailed it. Answered. Yeah. Bye.
And what's even frustrating is it's automatic. Like they don't have, if it's a newer car, it's you have it on auto. So once yeah. the ambient light gets, doesn't right. trick the sensor, then your lights turn on. So let's talk about dumbass lazy.
Well, yeah. I have another idea for the non-automatic cars. I have the notion that that your dashboard doesn't dim properly, or they don't have their dashboard set properly, so that you know something switches over, but their dashboard makes them think their lights are on when they're not.
Daytime running lights could.
I think
cause
100% right.
Yeah, daytime running lights could cause the same thing.
They
see their DRLs reflecting in front of them or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, but you know, when I mean, how many of us when we were young drivers just got that drilled into our heads when there was no auto? I think that's the other thing is now that everything is automatic, what you're saying, Ben, is people aren't realizing we were just trained that way. You know, when we were trained to turn on your lights as soon as it got twilight and so that's ingrained in us. But now that everything is automatic, and you didn't flip your thing, then you're not trained to get that, you know, automatic, oh my gosh, the sun's going down, I better turn my lights on.
Right.
Well, and we're also supposed to turn them on when it rains.
Right. Yeah. Tim, I think we lost you there.
Yeah, I think a lot of it also may happen when you have multi-car households where the cars are different ages, different trim levels, and the car that you drive every day, let's say 95% of the time, has the automatic function, and then you go drive your spouse's car and it doesn't have the same control setup, so you're expecting the lights to come on anyway, but you know the dashboard is electronic, so it's gonna have lights on it regardless,
right?
And you just assume that the lights are on.
Right, that's right. Well, and the other part of that is too, if you're in the city and you're on the expressways around the city, most of them are pretty well lit up, so you don't have an opportunity to see that your car is actually not projecting any light. And as opposed to being out in the sticks, where if your lights are not on, you know it immediately. So that's another part of it. But anyway, I think those are both good questions from Robert. Thank you, Robert. Tim, would you help us wrap up the show by answering the Grand Trivia Auto question?
Okay, well, let's take it from the top. The question was, the Ford EcoSport is the first vehicle imported into the U.S. from which country? A, Albania, B, China, C, India, or D, Brazil?
And I already know the answer here. So, Tim, if you want to direct the actual answering, go for it.
Or does anybody have any guesses out there?
Just guesses.
Yeah, I mean, I'm stuck between two countries, Albania. Albania and Brazil.
You're thinking Albania or Brazil. Misty, what are you thinking?
I'm going Albania.
Ben?
I'm kind of torn between Albania and China.
Okay, and Dave?
You know, what's funny is I think it's India, but I don't think it's the first car imported from India, so I'm totally befuddled. Yeah. I'm going to go with India.
Tim, what's the answer?
Gotcha. The answer is C, India. So, Dave, congratulations. You're our winner.
Hey,
and
Dave.
I know that India, Mahindra, which makes a lot of farm vehicles and other utility-type equipment, I think that they had brought in maybe some trucks, but I think they weren't roadworthy. I think they were for use on only on farms and construction sites. But I think, that's why the first proper, road vehicle is the Ford EcoSport.
Are you biased against two wheels then? Because I can think of some Indian-made motorcycles that have been sold here for a while.
Yeah.
One of them, in fact, is branded as a BMW.
Oh. No kidding.
Yeah. The 310 series. They've been out here for around 2-3 years or something like that. Also, the Royal Enfield brand is Indian made.
All right, this is good stuff. We'll have to do that, the whole Indian export episode. Yeah. So thank you, Tim, for being our guest today. Thank you for being our trivia czar. Good questions, and we'll definitely have to get together again when we delve deeper into that Billboard's top 100 car songs list. And thanks for being a part of the Thing About Cars family. We really appreciate you joining us for these things. Please tell your friends about us. Ask them to subscribe to the show and rate us on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or wherever it is that you catch the show. And in the meantime, thanks everybody for joining us. Be safe. Hope you guys are being safe and healthy out there. We will see you with another episode in about a week. Take care.
See ya.
Later.
So long.
Bye.
Happy trails.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.